Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It is the Anfield Wrap. It's the first Anfield Wrap when Liverpool are champions. And it's a fantastic thing to be able to do, a fantastic thing to be able to say. I'm Neil Atkinson, and with me, I've got Jay McKenna, Gareth Roberts, and Ben Johnson. And James, it is quite something winning the league, the brilliance of it all, and the journey. We're recording this now on the Sunday because we're giddy and we're overexcited, but it's been, you know, it's been a long, long journey, and it still feels great. It's great to think of. It's brilliant to have been part of.
Yeah, well, I'm sure, you know, I spent a bit of Thursday with Benjamin there in the bottom corner of the screen. Sorry, for anyone who doesn't know, this is an in-joke. Ben Jono's just discovered my name's James.
For the first time.
Quite a thing to discover after Liverpool have won the league. It's probably, you know what, I'm not even sure it feels real. I don't know what, when I done the show just after we won on Thursday night, I like couldn't quite square where I was feeling, and I said, like, this just feels like it'll go on forever. And I think because there hasn't been that like moment in the ground where, you know, you take the lead and you build up towards the 90th minute and the final whistle goes and there's that guttural release. Robbo had that, because that video of Robbo, that scream, you know, probably defines what many of us think. I didn't have that, and for me it's just sort of like, I feel like I'm still living the moment. I just sort of remind myself, little things make me smile thinking about it. I keep telling people, you know, the next morning, my nephew had gone to bed. His mum told him, and he wanted to ring me to tell me. So, like, the next morning, I'm in tears again because he's ringing me to tell me that Liverpool have won the league, and I'm like, I've got to pretend I didn't know. And he's like, no, they did. And, like, I'm crying. Then by this, I'm watching videos and I'm crying, and then I see another clip and I'm crying. It's I'm still living it. It hasn't quite sunk in. And to be fair, I hope it doesn't for a long time. I hope I get to experience this feeling for a very, very long time, because we've waited for a very, very long time.
It's the strangeness of time around it, Gareth, really. You know, it was coming for ages. The COVID-19 thing obviously hits, and it's a deeply serious issue, and it puts it all on hold and even jeopardises elements of it. We end up, I think, just absolutely overwhelmed by the fact that it does finally occur. I think the extra deferral, it was a 30-year wait, and depending on how old you are, your sort of consciousness of it happens at different times. I keep saying it was 2002, the year we went to Leeds and battered them but still didn't come away with the title. For me, it's the start of me feeling like we've got to get this thing won, so that's 18 years. But there is this sort of, you know, that extra bit of deferral, and the fact that even now, we're not going to get to be in the ground. We've got no idea when that gets to all happen for us. That again sort of defers it, but it does give it a real sense of strange magic as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of them. I'm with Jay a little bit in that it's like, you know, it's surreal, and it's something like you're still sort of pinching yourself about and reminding yourself about. And, you know, I was obviously, like a lot of people, I think, you know, there's a edge of disappointment all along that, you know, we're not going to be there for this big moment, the big let off inside the ground, all that. One thing I did take from the way things have gone, though, is that I was really glad that Liverpool put the performance in they did against Crystal Palace and played so well and played like champions, basically. Absolutely blew them away. Got everyone talking about how good they are at football again, and sort of put everything else to the side for the moment. And that for me was like a real joy, that game. And then from there on in, you just thought, right, well, when is it then? You know, the clock's ticking now. When is it? And, you know, I was surprised by the City's game against Chelsea. I thought we were all maybe getting a bit carried away. And I thought, you know, they'll still beat Chelsea. They're a great side. And then obviously it goes the way it goes. And like, it was just so hard to take in and so mad. And just even just seeing, like, I tried to take a picture of it, and it would have been a shit picture, and it didn't work anyway. But I was, I don't know what I was doing. I was trying to take a picture of the telly where it just said in the corner, Liverpool are Premier League champions. It's just this little bar in the corner. Because I couldn't believe it almost, I was like, just there for ages. Took about 20 pictures of it. All of them are shit. And it was like, and then I just thought, what am I doing? Do you know what I mean? But like, I definitely got sort of lost in the moment. And as Jay said, you know, that's kicking around on a video. And when I've watched that back, I don't even recognise myself. I don't know what I was gone. Do you know what I mean? Waited all this time for it. And I think there's going to be like loads of stages of it to enjoy. I mean, look, the season still hasn't ended. We've still got more games to watch. We've got this game against City coming up, which I think, you know, again, it's one of them where you can almost put the idea that we're not in the ground aside. It's going to be a great match. It's going to be fantastic to see them doing a guard of honour for our boys. Do you know what I mean? So there's constantly things to enjoy, even little things, daft things. Like, you know, my best mate, Johnny, made me a little cup the other week and give it to me on my birthday, and he said, don't drink from that until we've won it. And it says on it, Premier League champions 2020 and all that. And so, you know, got to have a brew out of that, and I'm just looking at this logo going, get it, get it.
It's Ben, we were watching Glastonbury stuff last night, and I sort of, like, it made me think of summers, not just at Glastonbury, but summers that you spend when you meet up with your friends and you talk about the Reds and you talk about, you know, we nearly won it, can we kick on? You talk about, it feels like we're a mile off, what are we going to do? You talk about, are we going to, you know, how do we buy X or Y? But ultimately, you're talking about the fact that you're not champions. You pointed out that they showed something from Springsteen, and it was 2009. And that at some point that summer, we'll have been saying, second this season, 86 points, we'll kick on from here. But it just sort of framed that, you know, we've had these summers of our lives where it's been the opposite of this. It's been sort of the journey's still not over. It's still not done. And I'm just sort of reminded of something our friend Adam says, you know, what are you going to do when we're champions, Adam? And he says, I'm going to spend the summer sitting in trees, smiling at passers-by. And it just made me think of that, you know, because it is this, it's been so long. There's been so many of them. There's been so many times you've said, what's the final piece of the jigsaw? Was that from the mid 90s? There was the idea of how do we change all of this? All of that is now gone, really. And even after last season with 97 points, there was still a right, well, what do we need to do to be able to kick on? And it transpired. It was just more of the same, but it is an amazing feeling to not have that sort of, what's the next thing for Liverpool to do?
Yeah. It's like it's almost like a zen-like feeling. Like he's just almost, it's really weird to explain, but I think you're right. It's every year you think, you know, especially when you've been close, what do we need to do to kick on from here? And I think the difference is you're there and you just think, oh, this is what it feels like to win the league. And we built it up in like, it sort of grew over time, you know, this longing for it into this sort of unmanageable, mad, unrealistic expectation and like it's going to complete our lives and we're going to be happy forever after and all this and it's took over like decisions, and I know people it's took over decisions in their life, like they had the opportunity to move away from Liverpool and didn't do it because they wanted to be here when Liverpool won the league, and they've been putting it off for fucking 15 years whatever because they're like, well, it might be this year, well, it might be next year, well, it might be in 3 years, or I best not go in case I miss it. And now you arrive at this point now, and it is just the little things. Like, nothing's changed, but everything's changed. Do you know what I mean? There's just this big release, this big weight, and it's like, this has not really changed anything at all, really. But it's changed, like, your outlook, your mindset. Like, my mindset, I just keep smiling and giggling, and it is weird the way there's no big moments. But then speaking to people who were knocking about and having a bevy when Liverpool won leagues, it wasn't big moments loads of times. It was always just a bit of a canter, and then you just won it, and you might win it when you're not playing. And I think personally the way it's turned out is as close to realistic in this time, this COVID-19 thing, as you can possibly get. Do you know what I mean? Liverpool weren't playing anyway, so you couldn't be in the grounds. You watched it from home, which, you know, a lot of people would have done anyway. The players were all together, which was a lovely little addition, which I didn't expect. But the players in the social bubbles, they managed to be able to be together, and it was a brilliant, you're going to talk about this, but it's a brilliant piece of management from the manager. As Andy Robertson says, well, we either just have a bevy and a barbecue and spend the night in a hotel, or we're all together when we win the league. So it's, there's no real downside to it. It was as close to normality as you could get to win it. And it's a great feeling. And it's just like, as you said, it's little things. Like, I was making a coffee before, and I was like, that's the first time I've had a cup of coffee as a champion. And it's called ridiculous, because I didn't do nothing towards it. I just watched. And I'm bouncing now, like I've got a medal on. Yay!
just on that there, Jono, you're saying about people making decisions about things. A few years back, I went to Australia to see my mates, and that did cross my mind. You know, you go somewhere to Boston, my mate lives there, and like, you know, trade union jobs out there. And I was thinking, I'd go away. And then I was totting up the things I'd know I'd miss, family, being close to kids, relationships could you know, be affected. And I was like, but Liverpool might win the league as well. I can't get up at 5 o'clock every morning and watch Liverpool win in the league. It'd be weird. So, I'm getting married next year. And my missus wants to do it on a bank holiday, and she picked the 2nd of May because she said the 2nd bank holiday weekend is the weekend of the Champions League final. And I was square with that. I was like, that's brilliant, boss. And then last year when we were playing Newcastle and we were still in for the title, it was the bank holiday weekend, and I had to like go to her and go, I think we need to look at this date, because that might be the weekend Liverpool win the league in 2 years' time. And she's like, are you fucking mad? I like kind of mad with us for a few days, like you can imagine the conversation. And I was like, well, no, and we actually reached the point at one stage where she was like, because we're getting married in the town hall, she was like, you can leave the town hall after the wedding, go to the match and come back. And I was like, you don't mean that. You don't mean that. And I'm not sure I can do that. Or whether I'd come back, I don't know. So I was like,
don't even know if we've got a match, by the way.
Yeah, we might play the Saturday and it'll be sound, but I was like, but we'd definitely be on the telly if it was to the league. And then this year, we've moved it basically now to the Sunday after the Champions League final next year. And I squared that away. I was like, I missed Kiev for different reasons. And if we win it, the parade will go past where we're having the party. I'm not going to say it on here because someone will come and fucking find the party if we win it now. It'll go past there, boss. And now I'm like, we fucking won the league now. Can we go back to the 2nd of May? That first May bank holiday's laughing, you know, and get the Champions League final in here. So it massively affects it. And now it's like this big anxiety. I never need to worry about it ever again because I've seen it.
There is, Gareth, with it all, there's the long-term brilliance within the club. We'll come on and talk specifically about the manager in a minute, but getting everything around the club's absolutely spot on for a period has contributed hugely to this. You know, 10 years ago, Hicks and Gillette still owned us. It's 4 and a bit years since we walked out to protest ticket prices. You know, this is the time frames we're talking about here. Hicks and Gillette was not a lifetime ago. It's still less than 10 years the day that they sell the club. And as I say, it shows how much has been got right, especially across the last 4 and a bit years, but perhaps even before then as well.
Yeah, I mean, I over this lockdown period, you know, like a lot of people, you'd end up sort of going through stuff or reorganising things around your home. And like, I ended up finding a load of the Well Read magazine to put together, which was sort of Hicks and Gillette era. And that was one of the reasons I started that magazine, to be honest with you, or one of the main reasons. And loads of the writing is about where we are, where we're at, where we're going. And, you know, I sat down with a brew and read some of it, and I was just like, this is just a different world, do you know what I mean? Like, loads of the stuff was like, you know, there was stuff in there from written by fans saying, we've just got to be realistic now about where we can go and what we can do. It's going to be some time before we're back up at the top, challenging for the things we want to do. You know, you think about under Hodgson and, you know, like setting new lows every week. You know, getting beat by sides that we should never get beat by. You know, kicking around in the relegation zone, listening to the dickhead say that, you know, a result at Goodison Park's utopia. We all know the hits, but, you know, that wasn't that long ago, and that was absolutely wild. And, you know, we were all so low then. We're all at each other's throats as well. That's another thing to remember about it all. I mean, you know, I think a lot of people like to say now, oh yeah, the fans played the part in sort of ousting Hicks and Gillette, and I still believe that to be true. But lots of people kicked off on the fans who were trying to do that and said, get behind the sides, and why are protests affecting games? And, you know, it was like a constant drama for the wrong reasons, Liverpool. And there always seemed to be something as well. You know, you've only mentioned like sort of two things there, but there's like, you know, even when we had a player as good as Suarez, you know, Suarez is biting people. Suarez is getting banned, and we're feeling we have to defend them in some way. And do you know what I mean? And it just always felt like really draining to be a Liverpool fan for a long time, I thought. And you can sound a bit spoiled, like saying things like that, because obviously in this 30 years, we've been waiting for the league title. We've won everything else.
You've seen them win everything now, Robert.
Yeah. And exactly. I've seen them win everything now. I've got the set. And it's like, you know, how many football fans would kill for that, you know, across the world to see their side do that? And I think we've got to remember that. But equally, it did seem for a long, long time that Liverpool was so far off, they were never coming back again. I mean, there's a graphic in the Times today, and it shows you like all the different managers, all the different seasons, and sort of where they were in terms of, you know, the title. So obviously you've got like, you know, last season Jürgen 1 point off it type of thing. But you've got like some of the numbers are like 38 points behind the team that won the league and things like that. And you think, and I'm looking at it going, sides have stayed up with 38 points. What? Do you know what I mean? How were we that far away from it? So, you know, the journey, like we've had all the highs and lows that you could possibly want, and this is the real high of highs. But we've been saying for ages, haven't we, on these shows, I think, that we felt like it was in the right place now for a while, and it feels different this time. It's not, you know, 13, 14, we knew we were on a ride. And we knew sort of as we were going, bits of the car were falling off. Do you know what I mean? and that Brendan was sort of patching them up on the way, and we might get over the line, and we just didn't. And then it all fell apart. I think this time, you know, you look at it, and yeah, there's always places you can say, we need a player there, we need a player there, you know, etc. That's always a thing in football. But there isn't something fundamentally wrong about the club like there has been so many times in the past, whether it's been the owners, whether it's been the academy, whether it's been the relationships between key people at the club. You just feel like everything now is pretty much right. And we should be really grateful for that, not just for winning the league, but for the fact that the club is in the place that we always wanted it to be. And you reference Hicks and Gillette. That's why I still can't get too angry, I've got to be honest now, about like certain transfers that don't happen and things like that. I just haven't got it in me now. Because when we were in the Hicks and Gillette era, I can remember writing in the likes of Welred saying, all I want is Liverpool to be able to operate within its own means, spend what it generates, that kind of thing. And, you know, it's doing that these days, and look where it's got us. And, you know, I know we're going to come on to them, but, you know, at the very top, and the biggest appointment of all, and the biggest thing anyone's got right in the last 30 years is putting Jürgen Klopp in place.
On Klopp, then, it's genuinely, it could be one of the best managerial jobs ever done across four seasons. It's important to say that we are now a super club. Some super club wins league shouldn't be that big a deal, but we were always a potential super club. But we needed someone to steer the course, and he's done that. And he's done that not from, you know, not from lashing loads and loads of cash. He's done that in a staged process. When Robbo says there about feeling like everything's together, everything's where it needs to be. Klopp's at the heart of that. He's at the heart of, we're going to be sensible. We're going to make decisions that are rational, but we're going to embrace magic, and we're going to embrace opportunity. And ultimately, I want you all to enjoy this as much as you can. And there isn't a bit of him, really, you know, from a leadership point of view, where he isn't just unbelievably impressive.
He might be the greatest man to ever walk the planet, genuinely. He's one of the greatest leaders. And it's easy saying that, you know, sat here with our medals around our necks and that. But it's genuinely impressive. It's unbelievable what he's done. And everything that, you know, almost everything that comes out of his mouth is perfect. Do you know what I mean? He just gets to the heart of the club, to the city, to the fans. He gets what makes the area tick. And for many years, that, you know, we've had great managers in the time where we haven't won the league, but none of them are as great as Jürgen Klopp. You know, all of them had some kind of, you know, weakness. You know, and that's fair, because the people, and that's, you know, everyone has. But you're looking at this fella and you're like, well, I don't see what is that. Do you know what I mean? I don't see him having a weakness in his approach to how he's dealt with everything while he's been at the club. I think everything he's done it. He's hit the nail on the head with everything.
For me, Ben, one of the things that's most interesting is if everything feels very, very planned, but he also adapts to circumstances brilliantly. Yeah. And I think that's the brilliance of it. So a really good example of it, I think, tactically, is the fullbacks. In 2017, when he's got his grand plan for Liverpool, the summer of 2017, he's not necessarily thinking Andy Robertson's going to be this player. He's thinking, I can improve Andy Robertson, I can develop him. Trent Alexander-Arnold, I'm sure that everyone's saying to him, he's got all the talent in the world. But he's not expecting to play with these fullbacks in this way. But they show something, and so he adapts it into the plan. It's not, well, you just need to work to my plan, and my plan will be proven right in the end. And it's things like that where I think, and that can sound like a smallish thing, or it can sound like an immediate football thing, but we've had managers, and there are managers around the country who don't adapt to what footballers do, who do instead say, no, you're all going to do my way, my plan, this is the way it works. You don't get that impression from Klopp. Everything's planned out, but everything is also flexible. And to have that skill, I think, is phenomenal.
I think it's bang on that, what you've just said. Like the example of Salah, I was reading in one of the papers today, he wasn't really Klopp's first choice. He was pushing for Brandt. And the club were saying, no, look, Salah's about to explode. I think Edwards was saying he's about to explode. We need to get him because he's amazing. And he's like, okay, Sanz, bring him in. And then he'd gone with it. You know what I'm saying? Oh, fucking hell, you're right. Yeah, he's amazing. Okay, well, you were right and I was wrong, so that's absolutely great. But that's the skill, isn't it? That's the brilliance of being an unbelievable manager, is that you surround yourself with people who are experts in every area and you empower them. And so you get this unbelievable. And he said it yesterday, and that part of the brilliance of him again is that, you know, it's easy to sit there and be, you know, self-satisfied and think I am great. Yeah, I have done a great job. But he sits there on his interview yesterday and says, it wasn't just me, I'm just the face of it. It was this whole management team. And he names them all. And then he said, you know, when he goes through them all, he says, they're the team and they've done it. And I was part of it. I'm the front. I'm the face. You know, and that's the brilliance of him. And you're right, the little tactical, you look at the tactical way we play football now in comparison to what he brought in. And it's a completely different football side. And he looks at the quality of what he's got and thinks, right, how can we get the best out of this and what can we tweak? And you know, you look at things that didn't happen and that would have had an impact. Like we nearly signed Fekir, and you look now, we nearly paid 60 million nickel for him. We never, because his knee was iffy. And you look now and think, well, how would that have worked? Do you know what I mean? Where would he have played? But it's just... It's one of them things. We've either got him, we've found a way to get the best out of him, and we'd have been a different side, but we'd have still been a great side. But it's an unbelievable job what he's done. It's an unbelievable job what he's done, and to the point where you look at that. I look at that. We were talking about this on Wednesday. I look at that Liverpool team that goes after that first 11, really, that first 11, 12. You know, they can make the odd change here and there, and I think personally, you look at that, I think we've completed 40. I don't think that can be improved ever. I think it's complete. Like it's all just better than the sum of its component parts. It's an incredible machine, and the challenge for me, I guess, now is to be able to tweak that, change that, be as formidable when, you know, that 11 isn't there. I mean, he's not a million miles away because we've won, nearly every game this season, and they all haven't played every game, so I don't know. It's an unbelievable thing that he's been able to do. He's an unbelievable manager. The ability to get us to improve so much in such a short space of time is remarkable, and it's almost perfect.
He's an emotional person, Jay. You sort of get to see that on the sidelines, but simultaneously he seems always really quite considered, quite reasoned. The emotion hitting him, I thought, was really interesting in that I sort of had felt he'd been the best, and obviously he has been, but frankly, being the best manager at effectively avoiding a lot of our bullshit, frankly, and all the stuff around winning the league and what it means. You know, he's very much focused in, I think, on the process, and that's the way he's looked at it. But you got to see it hit him, really, on those television clips. And I was intrigued by it. Like, he genuinely was was gone in a way that I wasn't entirely expecting, and maybe in a way that you don't quite get to see after the Madrid final either. You know, you've sort of got to see him live that emotional journey in front of your very eyes, when I just sort of thought part of what he'd done and was, and maybe this is true at the same time, was rise above it.
Yeah, I think what you see when he talks in this, and even a bit after Madrid, I think, where there's a sense of achievement. He knows how big this is because he does know and appreciate the club and its story, and it's as much emotion as it is anything else. And I think that's because he knows it's a destination. It's what Robbo's just said. He knows we've got all this emotional baggage and feeling and concern and issue and anger and frustration and angst. He knows we've got all of that. And as Jono's just said there, he's such a good leader. I reckon on the face of it, he's gone out there and he's stripped it away. He's almost told us to leave it all behind. He's told us to forget about it. He's told us to stop being doubters and become believers. He's wanted us to forget about it because he knows it hinders us, but ultimately hinders the team. We get nervous, we get angsty, we get anxious, and that transmits onto the players. And he knows he has to do a big job. But I reckon behind the scenes, he's used that. He's been telling them players, you think they love you now, they will love you a million times more if you do this. If you do this, you will be, they will think they're wearing medals around their neck making a cup of coffee because they will love you that much. You will be everything to them. And they are, as a consequence. Madrid, this, the way they play, the way they are off the pitch, the way they are on the pitch in terms of wanting Liverpool to win, wanting the City to do well, he's bought into that because I think he believes it. I done an interview a few years back with a guy about, he was talking about Shankly and why Vice President Shankly picked Shankly as the name and stuff like that, and what was it about him. And I said, I think he was just in tune with the City and the support. And I think that's probably the greatest compliment we can pay Jürgen Klopp. He is in tune with the City and its support. But what he sees, because he is such a good leader, is he sees the bits we can use, the bits that we can't now, the bits that we should never use, and the bits that we just need to dip into as and when. And he's done all of that in the last few years as he's built us up. I think you're right. That journey of the last 4 years is incredible. To think how far we've come, and you know, the journey of the last 10 is, well, it's remarkable. No one needs us to relive those. But you know, if you'd have said to me in June of 2010, right, you're going to go through all of this and then you're going to have a fourth, not that you're going to come back and win the league and the European Cups, we'd have all hoped and imagined that, because as you say, we see ourselves as a super club. But if you'd have said to me, you're going to have Roy Hodgson, you're then going to have Kenny, then you're going to have Brendan Rodgers, and there's going to be all these moments, but I promise you it gets better after 2016, and by the end of the decade you'd have done this, I'd have been saying to them, you're fucking mad. You're genuinely mad. Because I don't think people realised how far and how far the rot had set in because of 2010, and how damaging it was to the club. And he has, honest to God, he's played the blind in turning it around in the time he has.
Just on that, Gareth, the idea of, and I think what Jay's sort of getting at there is, it isn't just the silverware, but the silverware is what crowns it. It's the idea of loving the club and loving the footballers. For me, one of the things about 13-14 was it made me really love footballers again, like when I was a kid. You know what I mean? Like, footy players are amazing, aren't they? And that might, should, you know, it's a basic sentence, but it's what I felt in 13-14 in a way by 2010 I didn't. And in terms of being able to love the club and what it is and what it stands for, that for me is Klopp's greatest achievement, more than even just this trophy. This trophy obviously crowns that, but it is the idea of being able to love Liverpool Football Club.
Yeah, it's what Ben said before as well about Tutter. He just seems to get everything right. I agree with that, in that, you know, I've always been interested because of like the fields I've worked in messages and how messages are put across and how they influence things. And what you see with Klopp is he's got this real brilliant knack of always turning what could be a negative into a positive almost. I thought what he said about that Palace game, just to mention that again, was absolutely brilliant, where he said, I said to the players, let's play like there is a crowd in here for one. And they did. And also, let's produce the best performance there's ever been behind closed doors. Like, that's brilliant. That it's that simple, but it's brilliant because it would be easy to go and get involved in what you're hearing from outside about, oh, it's not the same, it's different, it's not real football, there's an asterisk, all of that shite. And instead, he comes up with a new series of messages, which are good ones, and says, no, you know, get stuck in like there's a crowd in here. Show them how much they have meant to you across this course of this season. And, you know, one of the best things about that game, as well as the brilliant goals, as well as the performance, as well as not allowing an opposition team a touch in your box, which is unbelievable, is the fact that they're 4-0 up and there's four of them diving in for tackles. There's four of them all over an opposition player, when that's traditionally a time in a match where you're like, it's done. And what's he doing there? Go ahead. Have the ball for a bit. I'm not bothered. But, you know, the hunger was unbelievable. And I think that's one of the best things that Jürgen Klopp's done. You're right to say he's made us all fall in love with the club again, but he's made the players fall in love with the club. He's made the players realise, as Jay's touching on, I think, as well, about what they can do for us and what they can do for the city, and how it becomes this lovely circle where basically everyone loves each other and everyone makes each other feel better. And that's what it's got to. You know, I don't hear as many conversations these days about, oh, the fucking, they earn this and they earn that and they're not arsed and they're not in touch with the common man and all that stuff. It wasn't long ago we were saying things like that. And it wasn't long ago we were looking at our wage bill, for example, when we all became finance experts during Hicks and Gillette. And we're looking at the wage bill going, why is he on that? Why is he getting that? He's not worth that. He shouldn't be on that. Now, I've honestly heard people go, like, it hardly ever comes up. I don't know if it does in, like, your social circles, but anyone mentions it in mine, how much a player's on, instantly someone else will go, it's worth it, Dominic. It's brilliant. And it's like, that's, again, there's a big difference. Once upon a time, we're cry-arsing about wage bills and transfer fees, and we're calling our own players all kinds. When's the last time you heard at Anfield, when we were still allowed to go, someone referred to as you? Because I haven't heard that for ages. But, you know, like, that used to be a thing, didn't it? Fuck off, you!
Yeah.
And that was...
I reckon Moreno's the last one. He's the last of the use.
Carriers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just on the players then, Ben. I mean, Henderson being so emotional from the minute he got on the telly was... Like, again, have you been carrying this round, lad? Honestly, the extent to which you just almost wanted to give him a hug and say sorry about us. I know it's hard work. But it is from the second he's on television, so you get the impression it's been there prior to that as well. You know, the other players mostly all look like they were having a great laugh, enjoying themselves, joking about days off, etc., etc. But with Henderson, I was gobsmacked. It wasn't like it grew the moment on him. From the second he started to talk, he was absolutely cut up because he knows what it means. He's made himself so central to the club.
Yeah, and that sort of shows his quality, doesn't it? That he's attuned. He's Klopp's mouthpiece on the pitch. He's the one who you know, one of the things I were like watching the game the other day on Wednesday without any of the noises, you can hear Henderson screaming and that the relentlessness of him. Do you know what I mean? And that's, you know, that's a measure of him, of his quality, and of his quality as a man, that he gets, he's so emotionally invested in this thing that we want, that he you know, he's getting upset after a match, even though it's obvious we're going to win the league. It's been obvious for months and months and months, like nearly 6 months it's been obvious. But I think that's one of the things why it feels so good at the moment, is the reaction from the players and from the manager once, you know, when you see the videos of them all cheering when William scores and when the final whistle goes, because it shows that it means that much. I think if they'd have almost been that sort of, oh yeah, we've won it, sounds, we knew we were going to win it anyway, that, you know, and that sort of attitude, and they hadn't have got together and they hadn't have had that outpouring of joy, then I think it would have soured it a little bit for me. Do you know what I mean? Almost took the edge off, not took the edge off it, but you know what I mean? It's like seeing them behave in a similar way to us, you know, it sort of just reinforces the point Robbo was saying before, and that everyone just seems to be attuned to this, to work in the same way for the collective goals, and it's just a great thing to be part of, you know, at a time when you can't be part of mass gatherings, and, you know, Glastonbury's on the telly at the moment, that's a special thing for, you know, for me to go to. And you can be part of that sort of wider community almost. I know this sounds weird, by the way, but you can be part of that wider community, and then something like this happens, and you see that actually, yeah, we are. This is, you know, the way we live our lives, and this, the way this team have sort of took that on board. And the way you've got this unbelievable manager and this unbelievable team who think, actually, this area of the world where people are like, you know, they show this character and the, you know, they act in this manner and all the things that we like, you know, we like the players to work hard, we like them to press, we don't want anyone to be a shithouse, you know, you all that stuff. They're going, yeah, I'm into them. That's sound that we'll base our team around that. And it just feels like this perfect marriage, you know, this just pair. And you know, you don't get that hardly ever in football, you know, you don't get that perfect fit, and that's why it's so special.
Them being together for it, Jay, it was good to see. And the fact that they do sort of have that sort of those personality, I loved them sort of making the noises they were making as the final whistle was coming, and then realising it wasn't going to be bang on the money, so they had to do it again and find a way to do it. As it went right the way through, it was just really funny. It was really human. Like, we've got to keep going, oh, have we? It's crap when that happens. But they did have that sort of, they had that, they got that release together. And I think that that does matter. It certainly matters for me that they got it.
Yeah, sorry, the baby's crying. He's clearly trying to replicate the noise there as well, isn't he, that baby? For so fucking long. I'm glad they did, because they are exceptional footballers. They are exceptional footballers, not just in their talent that we, you know, is very evident across all of them. And I think that's one of the big things I think about this team, is that even the ones you might class as industrious and the hard workers of the team, the ones who are, you know, who are carrying the piano, they've all chipped in. They've all had something to contribute. Good goals, good, you know, good passes, assists. You know, Milner, Henderson, Wijnaldum have all had their big moments of being the star in a game, even when you might associate with them as the ones who maybe do lots of the graft. So that they're there to have that moment together. They deserved it. It wasn't going to be the same for them. They'd love that moment in the stadium with the fans, but the only thing that was missing for them was us. They got to be there with their mates, their teammates, the people they worked hard with, they've been through it with, the ones they sat in the dressing room, I think by and large for all of them, after Kiev, you know, and experienced that low. They've been able to experience those highs. You know, Madrid probably masks how good, how maybe disappointing it might have felt last year. They had Madrid still to look forward to and we win it, so that they ignore that. They get that this year, and I bet you for the last few weeks they've probably been sitting there thinking, not only when am I going to see my mates again, when's it going to be boss to be sat in the changes and having that laugh and a joke, you know, in Melwood? Well, when are we going to get to do this? We deserve this. I've worked hard for this. It would have felt horrible for them being gifted it. We'd have made the most of it. Liverpool have won the league as far as we're concerned. That's boss. Them who've like worked really hard for it, and then someone just goes, oh yeah, lad, here it is. Doesn't matter what you've done, you can have it now. It would be a bit disappointing. So they've got to, even though they didn't get to play, they've got to watch another team lose. That gives them the league title. They've got to play their part. They've won the night before. So for them, that, you know, those emotions spell out, don't they? And it's amazing to see, you know, how emotional they are, how happy they are, you know, how much they love the absolute Strauss anthems. You know, anyone in town now, any Evertonian in town listening to Show Me Love in the next 6 years is just going to sit there and think, fucking turn that Copite song off. That's what it's going to be. That's now going to be a Copite song. If Jamie Webster hasn't fucking figured out some words by next year, then I don't know what he's doing in lockdown. Do you know what I mean? That's, you know, those little moments they get. It's pure. It's raw. It's honest from them. It's great to see. And you know, I'm glad they get that moment, because they deserve it. They are fantastic footballers, and evidently, in, you know, from the things we hear and lots of the things we see and lots of the things that we hear that nobody knows about. I'm sure we've all heard stories of things they've all done. That, you know, they are fantastic human beings as well, who've contributed more than just what they do on the pitch. So I'm glad they got to have that moment, even if they didn't invite any of us to Formby Hall.
Jay talks about the honesty there, Gareth. Got to have an honest conversation about what we saw elsewhere on Thursday and Friday night, now from Liverpool supporters, including ourselves. That's why we're going to be very, very honest throughout it all. First thing really is on Thursday and Friday night, and there is now the potential of a court case, so we will be a little bit careful as we speak. But should ultimately Thursday and Friday be viewed differently as far as you're concerned?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I've had lots of people tell me that I'm wrong for that, because I tweeted as much. But to me, Thursday was, or what I saw of Thursday, what I was involved in on Thursday was a spontaneous outpouring. It was just like, you know, I mean, Jay talked about, you know, you can literally see me on a video, like, my head's gone, we've won the league, I've waited 30 years for that moment. And the idea that, you know, I'm going to sit in a flat on my own and just listen to noises outside at that moment. Well, no, I'm not, I'm sorry. And, you know, you're allowed to go outside with six people. We've had that messaging from the government. We've had the government no longer does a daily update on coronavirus. The government's messaging all the way through is that, you know, we're now the other end of a spike. Next week, pubs open. Not long after, you'll be able to travel again. You know, there's all kinds. You've had the Prime Minister talking about taking England out of national hibernation. So
use the word bustle.
Yeah.
Bustle.
So what I'm saying, I'm not trying to excuse for a second some of the extreme behaviour that we've seen in Liverpool over the last few days. But what I would say is, I don't think everything in Liverpool should be viewed through that prism, because that is a minority. That is, you know, the extreme of it, the stuff that you see on videos, the stuff with the treatment of the police, the treatment of key buildings in Liverpool, the mess that was left is absolutely grim. I don't excuse any of that, because I'm not a part of that. I don't like that. That doesn't represent me. That's not a good thing about our city. I'm more cheering for the people that went the next day and out to clear it up. And I don't understand as well, you know, there's a big culture in Liverpool of just calling people a Tory, you know, about behaviour. You know what I mean? That's Tory behaviour, that. And Tory behaviour to leave a load of shite on the floor and go, that's for someone else, that. That's the biggest Tory behaviour I've ever seen. And you know, that is a part of our city that we're very proud of. That is a landmark, that is a tourist destination. And to just go there and leave that in that state, and that's people en masse who've done that. That's not one or two individuals. That bit of it was really, really grim. Thursday, as I said, my view on it is that it was, people didn't know what to do, almost, do you know what I mean? So the part of Liverpool I live in and what I saw, people came out and were literally saying, I just had to come out. I just, you know, like, my head's gone, it's 30 years. And, like, you know, where I was, it was not dangerously overcrowded. And we produced some content from there. And people have criticised me for being a part of that. But we're socially distanced, from what I can see still when I've looked back on that content. And I didn't feel when at that moment that my health was in danger, that I was putting other people's health in danger. Also as well, you know, it was always my plan always was, well, when we've won it, what safe way and what legal way can I be with a few friends to mark the moment? And my plan was to go to Sefton Park again. I'm be in Sefton Park with some people and socially distance, drink a few drinks, mark the moment and say Liverpool have won the league. That was my plan. As it was, no one really gravitated towards the park by me. They gravitated towards Lark Lane. That's where people were. So that's where I was. From what I can see and what I've heard and all the rest of it, I think it did get to sort of, it obviously got to dangerous levels around Anfield. I didn't go to that. I didn't fancy that. I saw some pictures of it and thought, not for me. I stayed away from that. I think as well, one thing that doesn't get mentioned in most of the conversations I've seen so far, one fella tweeted me, and he had a lot of sympathy for what he was saying. He was like, I live in Anfield, mate. And he was like, yeah, none of that was fun for me. And he was like, you know, Anfield ended up a mess the next day. And so what he was saying was, when I'm saying Thursday's different to Friday on Twitter, he was like, well, it's not for me, mate, because I'm living here. And like, people were here till 5 a.m. and I couldn't sleep. And there's a care home down the road and, you know, things like that. So, but look, I just think, we've talked in this podcast, we've talked from the very start of the Anfield app to now about what football means to us personally, to people in this city, how important it is, how high on the agenda it is, how massive in life it is. So after three decades, people were always going outside. People were always going outside to mark that moment. You can't expect the population of a city to all stay indoors. And I understood why the messages came out from the mayor, the club, Jurgen Klopp, Kenny Dalglish. I've had all them thrown at me as well. I understand that. But the Prime Minister of the country wasn't backing those messages up. The Prime Minister of the country has said that it's okay to go outside. The Prime Minister has saw, you know, what has happened around the country, not just in Liverpool, and sort of shrugged his shoulders at it. the police haven't been given the powers to break these things up, or if they have got them, they haven't used them. The lockdown has been soft all the way through. You know, every day you pick up the paper or you read the internet and there's like, you know, there's another rave, there's another gathering, there's stuff in Notting Hill, there's stuff in London, there's obviously stuff in Liverpool. What I'm saying is, a lot of people for a long time now have not recognised that this lockdown's got any teeth and don't really believe that it applies to them. So I'm not surprised by how things have unfolded, but I still can't get behind Friday, because for me, Friday, like, the difference was that it was planned. I'd heard people talking about it for a long time before, and it rang alarm bells for me, I've got to be honest. But I didn't know personally what I could do about that. Maybe I could have done something. People have been telling me I'm more influential than I give myself credit for. Yeah, maybe I could have done. And maybe I could have done. I've thought about it loads since. But, you know, I drove past the period around about 5 o'clock-ish. Not to go there. I was driving past. And I thought then, this isn't going to end well. This isn't going to end well.
On Friday, Jay, I think what Gareth's just said there, from afar, and I want to be really clear about this because I wasn't present and I had no intention to be present. I had no desire to be present, not least because of what Gareth just said and the way he's articulated it. We've all been, those of us who were on this and a lot of our listeners, I suspect, we've all been in football-based gatherings and we've all been in ones where you've had a minute where you think to yourself, I'm not sure about this. And from afar, from social media, before anything that's, you know, that's being filmed around fireworks, little bits that I'd seen when I was just sort of checking my phone through the day, I was feeling already like, wouldn't want to be there, couldn't be bothered with that.
So Thursday, I think there is a difference, and I think there's a difference in even in some of the behaviours on either day as well. I think there are some things that are very black and white, and there are others that are big shades of grey. You know, we seen each other, Neil, Thursday night. Yeah. Ordinarily on a Thursday night, would I walk to South Road train station, mate, with a half a bottle of Amaretto and, you know, go to the beach with you, mate, at midnight? Well, I don't think so, mate.
We've never done it yet, wouldn't it? But, the first
know,
time.
Never done it yet, but, you know, there's context, there's circumstances, isn't there? The lockdown and people want to join together in a way that they are allowed to. There's some of the things that occurred, people are allowed to do. Whether they should is a different matter, but though, you know, that scene outside Anfield, those same groupings happen on Bournemouth Beach. You don't, and I think I've read the subscribers group a bit on some of this, and I'll come on to Friday in a second, but the subscribers group on this. I think there's a big thing people need to understand. You just might disagree with someone on this. You just might see it different. Try and understand why they see it the way they do. This doesn't, there are some things where there's right and wrong, there's others where it's not as clear cut for different reasons. Try and listen and understand that. And I think Robbo's articulated lots of that really well from a personal perspective. On Friday, I was a bit strange. I was off on Friday anyway, and me and my missus went into town with the baby and had a little walk around the shops, and we were due to go to her mates sitting in the back garden to have a drink and celebrate just catch up really. And there was a bit of me, I was thinking, I think I want to go to town. I think I want to go and do something. I've seen everyone walking around town, not necessarily on a Friday, but in previous weeks, walking around town on a Saturday, stopping and getting a pint or two in place, and I was thinking, I want to do something like this. And I was thinking of texting my mate to ask him if he fancied it. And I, early on, I'll be clear, I don't think the pier head looked bad early on. So there's a timeline to this, isn't there? People were gathering, but they were largely social distanced. The people I seen posting about on social media were in their social bubbles or were with their family that they were with, or close to friends that I'm sure they've been close with in back gardens and stuff like that. Doesn't make it right. Some of that might be wrong, but that's what they were doing. Relatively well spaced out. It's a sunny afternoon. I seen some of the people at the Anfield rap sat by the studio, you know, distanced, having a pint in the sunshine. I'm sitting there looking at that thinking, well, that's largely what people across the country are doing on days like this, let alone when Liverpool have won the league. I think you're right where it begins to change and it begins to get a bit moody. I'm sat there, as I say, on Friday night, and I'm texting some people who know about this, going, this looks a bit dingy now. This, you know, what looked like it could have been sound and a decent laugh has changed. It's getting busier. And then Joe Anderson tweets a photo, and I'll be clear on this. I look at that photo and I see problem areas. I see where people are very closely congregated together. But then I see others where people are very obviously not close together. There are big gaps, there are people distanced. But I begin to look at that and think, this now looks like when you turn up a square in a European away game and it starts to get it looks boss early on in the morning, afternoon,
you're having a drink in the sunshine, you're sat in a little bar having a drink, before you know it, it's chopping, you can't get a drink, and you're saying to your mate, shall we go somewhere else? Yeah. And that's the bit where it changes then for lots of people. Whether they should or shouldn't have been there, I'm, you know, this is my honest assessment. That's the bit where I think lots of people, and I know from some who I know were there or know people who were there, they said around 7, 8 o'clock, they began to think, this, nah, not for me, time to go kind of thing. And they went. And that's whether they should have been there or not. I think Friday is very different than Thursday. I think you can't excuse the actions that have taken place on Friday, and nor should anyone attempt to, you know, the. That's it. That's my favourite bit of the city. That and the Georgian Quarter are my favourite two parts of town. The bits, you know, I love going down the pierhead. I love walking along the front. I'm incredibly proud. I'm incredibly jealous that everyone on the other side of the water gets to look at that every single day. The idea that anyone wants to fire rockets at the Labour buildings, just, you know, under this notion, I don't know what, that it was blue or that I haven't known it. They don't own it. You know, be grown-ups about it. It's a building, for fuck's sake. It's not as if it's standing there laughing at you singing Everton songs, is it? It's a building. Been there a long, long time. It'll be there before, it was there before Everton, and it'll be there after them. That notion, I don't know what goes through people's minds to do this, but I think there's another element of that's come up in this, is it's almost become an argument of purity from some, and that's the bit. There's no room for nuance. I have been texting various people yesterday, grappling with whether I should say anything on social media. I've said lots about work and different events, but I have not commented on any gatherings at Bournemouth Beach or anywhere like that, because I think there's context to lots of these, and 140 or 280 characters does not give you it. But there is, and I tweeted something around this, the behaviour of those at the pierhead does not represent me. And anyone attempting to characterise that as being a Liverpool supporter thing or the people of the city as en masse should reflect on that, because that isn't true. The people, as Robbo says, who tidies up the next day, reflect more people like me, I think, and like us, I'm sure. There's then this bit in the middle where those people who behave like that, I think, should be reflecting about what they've done, because it makes it harder. I will come on this show, I'm sure, in the future, and talk about how supporters are treated and policed, as I have done in the past. They make that job harder. And, you know, God, and I've had this conversation with some people who are doing this still actively. I'm not actively involved in Spirits of Shankly anymore. But, that, you know, imagine the next time they go to the mayor. Imagine the next time they go to the club. Imagine the next time they go somewhere and say, trust us that we'll be able, trust us that, you know, you trust us that we should be allowed to paint in our seats, trust us this. It gives our opponents easy ammunition, and it makes our job, even with our allies, harder. But the characterisation of it from some, and people who sought to denigrate those there, and the wider city and the wider support, who are, in the cases of some Everton fans, making snide comments around victims and Heysel and Bulgarian waiters, should reflect on when you're telling other people about their behaviour and the purity of that. You know, look at your own as well. That's not to say what you're saying is wrong, but it does draw into question why you're saying it. Now, that's not me excusing what happened. I don't want this to be a Liverpool and everything. As far as I'm concerned, Friday was dickheads and non-dickheads. That's the side you lie on this. There were people who were there who were still in the non-dickhead camp for me. Whether people think they should or shouldn't have been there, they're in the non-dickhead camp. There are the dickheads who behaved the way they did and went to certain extremes, not just with the fireworks, but other behaviours that we've seen, the violence, the very, very close gatherings and stuff like that. And there's probably a bit of people in the middle maybe that are in the grey area that cross between both. But it isn't as easy to characterise as some have said. There's some bits of it that are clearly visible, things we've seen, things we've heard that are, you know, it's black and white, right and wrong on this. The rest is a bit more nuanced. And I'll mention this because they've been getting bits of stick, and it's not to do with me, despite the people who calling me chubby in the Echo comments section as some kind of SOS Venter quote. I fucking wish I got paid for all my quotes would be dead bits by now. But they've characterised, you know, Spirits of Shankly should apologise to the mayor for what he said. Well, I think there's a whole heap of context between when Spirits of Shankly and the city and myself and the supporters and the football club and I'm sure many others questioned what Joe Anderson was saying. Joe Anderson wasn't saying people would gather to celebrate the title. Joe Anderson was saying that's why games shouldn't be played behind closed doors at Anfield. There was a particular set of circumstances in which they commented on that. It was at a time when the government's message was stay at home, save lives. The government message changed since, as we've said. The behaviour of all of us has changed. I'll say all of us. The majority of us has changed since, of what we deem to be safe or acceptable now, not just because of the law, but because of the change of circumstances. The narrative
has changed. And the week, the Sunday before the Merseyside derby, the mayor, as was right, I believe he was right, gives an interview with Greg O'Keefe where he says that the derby is safe to be played and should be played at Anfield. The safety advisory group that meets at the City Council of various stakeholders and partners agrees that that game should be played. That is policed in a certain way. Thursday is not. Nobody's expecting that to happen. I wasn't expecting people to go to Anfield when we weren't playing. I just wasn't. It didn't cross my mind to. Maybe no one foresaw it. Maybe in the future they would. Friday, people were texting about it, as was said. And I think there was a mistaken message in there. But this idea, it was some kind of like, you know, we were saying people were never going to do something, and then they did, and we knew they did, and we should, and you know, Spirit of Shankly or others should apologise to it. I think it is just missing out a whole load of context. I'd happily have a grown-up conversation with lots of people about this, and you know, maybe agree to disagree and accept that mistakes might be made. Not on my part, this I didn't do it, but I'm saying I'd happily do a podcast like this. But I think the problem so far is the narrative around this and the conversation that's took place has been devoid of nuance, and some of it shouldn't have any nuance. As I say, there are clear lines on this, but lots of it hasn't, and there is lots of nuance. There is lots of context for some of this, and people I know, and some of those same people, you know, I'll give an example because it's a personal thing. There's a person I know who's tweeted about Bulgarian waiters making a dig at Michael Shields, saying that Spirit of and commenting that Spirit of Shankly, expecting Spirit of Shankly to apologise to a mayor, the same mayor, by the way, and this is where it's the point, the same mayor who put his life, his livelihood on the line to help Michael and his family prove his innocence and become free. This warped discussion that's taking place around it. Let's have this conversation as human beings. This isn't a Liverpool and Everton thing. There are times Liverpool fans have misbehaved. There are times Everton fans have misbehaved. And the same will happen in the future. Let's have that conversation grow up. You might think someone should apologise. You might think someone should be more responsible at the club or not. Let's have that conversation. Let's learn that lesson. No one sat there on Friday, I can assure you, thinking, let's do football. I don't think the police did. I don't think the council did. I don't think the club did. I don't think supporters did. Ben?
I think it's really complicated and it's really difficult, and it's important to note that no one really alive has ever been involved in a fucking pandemic, and so no one knows how people as a group are going to behave. That said, I think I didn't go. I don't want any sort of recognition for that. I didn't go because I was fucked. If I hadn't been fucked, I may have got caught up in the moments and thought, oh yeah, this might be a good idea. I think looking at it, I think it's difficult to take an opinion when England fans, I think one of the most disappointing things for me is, you know, I'm vocal about Divi football fans gathering in a square when the Euros are on and smashing bars up and saying Liverpool fans are different than that. When this happens and it's fucking disappointing because you think, for fuck's sake, boys, do you know what I mean? From a personal, and I'm not saying anyone's gone there with any intent whatsoever to cause trouble. People's behaviour changes because they've had a bevy, and things happen, and yeah, it's not great. And I'm disappointed that it happens because it's deflected. It's given people in positions of power more armour. They don't need stuff like this happening whereby they can say, look at them dickheads gathering together, all of them taking no notice of advice, doing this, fucking have a murder, look at the state. Some people were fucking made up that it happened. Do you know what I mean? They were fucking made up. Yeah. And that makes me angry. It makes me angry that we've given them the opportunity to be made up. And I'm not, it's understandable that people gathered, and it's important to note, I think it's important to note that they weren't initially, when they're gathering, doing anything illegal. You are allowed to go to town, you're encouraged to go to town. Now, whether that's right or wrong is a separate matter. You are encouraged to go. You know, I didn't decide to go, but I've been reading about the coronavirus for fucking months on end. Do you know what I mean? And I'm obsessed with it. And I'm obsessed with the behaviour around it. But you can't say to people, go and enjoy the beach, and then consequently moan when the fucking beach is chocky, when it's roasting, and you've got a whole area of the south of England saying, oh, it's a state of emergency because too many people are turning up, we can't get emergency vehicles in. Well, something's wrong in your messaging, lads. You either need to be saying, don't go to the beach, or you can all go to the beach, but you can't all go at the same time. You're never going to get a reaction. Everyone's going to have, well, what can we do today? You know, I'm missing all my mates. I can't go for a bevy. What can we do?
Ultimately, they've made it. It's been made to be subjective. It's been made, a grey area has been left there. I mean, one of the things I brought up before is that I seen footage of Brighton Beach, and there's a big sign there, and it's in the colours of the government messaging on this electronic sign. Too busy? Question mark. And then next screen, go home. What's the question mark for? Like, if you're telling people to go home, put on it, go home, it's too busy, this is dangerous. But there was a subjectivity even to that. And you know, look, there's better political minds than me as to why that is and why that subjectivity is being left there. And we're still hearing stuff about herd immunity and stuff like that. Jay said before, having a big think about even saying something, I was the same. And I felt like I should, because loads of people were directing stuff at me because they said, you've been saying all along, fans wouldn't do this and fans wouldn't do that, blah, 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 blah. But all this told you so's and point scoring that was going on yesterday and ended up eating up a lot of my day. And maybe I shouldn't have got involved, but it did. But, you know, when I was reading it, I was thinking, well, there's nothing here saying no one, there was absolutely no problems around the Merseyside derby. There was absolutely no problems at all around the Crystal Palace game. Like I said before, people absolutely love football in the city, and it's dead easy to sift from afar, I think, and just go, but you should, you know, think about your health and think about your health of your family, and you should have just stayed at home. Why didn't you just stay at home? That's fine, and that's with hindsight, and that isn't in the moment, and that's the easiest thing in the world to do, point fingers with hindsight and see and say, well, look, that happened and that's your fault. Like I said before, I think some of the stuff that the Anfield app's done is not great. You know, speaking as a collective and part of a collective, you know, I wasn't happy to see that video go out, and I wasn't happy to see images go on social media. So if I can apologise for the collective, well, there you go, I am doing.
Just to expand on that, just very, very quickly, what Gareth said there, Anfield app contributors have disparate views, and we encourage disparate views. We want disparate views on all sorts of matters and different ways in which they approach their Liverpool support. We want that as well. We want to be as broad a church as possible because that's what we want to reflect. All of that said, the Talking Reds video that went out, which some of you listening to this may have no sense of whatsoever, and that's perfectly understandable, that went out on Friday, that was filmed from the pier head, should never have been filmed. And for me, that's, you know, relatively straightforward. But people being disappointed in it is perfectly understandable. I think Gareth's just articulated that to an extent. You know, ultimately, the end of this is that we work to do the best stuff that we can, and we work never to disappoint. And so the best way in which we can obviously move forward from that is to not disappoint. And I hope the conversation that was just had, as I say, which was very, very honest, is an example of the way in which we want to go about what we do. All right, quickly then, we'll move forward to Thursday night's game against Manchester City. I think it's going to be some game, Jono. I really do. In that the pressure of defeat for them, I don't think is all that great. So I reckon they can cut loose. I think the idea that if they'd have got beaten, we'd have been made champions by beating them, they'd have found that difficult, possibly. I think our lads are going to want to go there and make a point. They'll take some beating. And I think there's going to be something in someone's mind, whether it's Jordan Henderson, whether it's Jurgen Klopp, whether it's Pep Guardiola, that in a way it might actually be the first game of next season.
Yeah, it's definitely got a sense of, you know, tone setting, hasn't it? And I think it's going to be a really strange game of footy because it's almost a free pass. Do you know what I mean? It isn't. For Liverpool, there's no pedal anymore in the game, except for its possible impact on mindset. But what's for sure for me is that we'll want to beat them while they're down. We'll want to prove, look, we're a better side. It's clear we're a better side. You've lost however many times you've lost. You've won in four games. We've lost all your away games to the top six, bar Arsenal, and then they're crap. So
they don't count. They just don't.
They don't. I mean, that's it. And I think Liverpool will want to show that, you know, in the mindset, you don't have the mindset Liverpool have got, and then don't turn up on Thursday. And Klopp was already talking about it. on the night they won the league. You're saying you can't go to City with a half a mindset, and you can't go to City with half a team, or you'll get battered. So we'll go there, we'll be ready, and we'll be ready for the fight, and it'll be an unbelievable game of footy. For them, it's massive for them, I think. I think it's massive for them, because I think it won't be as bitter a blow as them getting beat at home for us to win the league there. But if we go there and beat them, and beat them convincingly, then it's a hard thing to sell unless you're carrying out massive changes in the summer. It's a big thing to change to sell a message that are way better than them. We're like, well, we're fucking not, mate, because they only got beat once last year and they've just battered us at home. So it's a fascinating game of footy, and it's going to be weird to watch it, because there's nothing really on the line. We've completed 14 now. We can pack in if we wanted. We're not going to, but we can. So like, it's a surreal. It's going to be weird.
Jay,
I think they'll want it. I think they'll want to send a statement. I think they'll, and the professionals and the way Guardiola is. Guardiola gives no, there's no gimmies. Guardiola really wants to win. Seeing the teams he picks sometimes for league cup games, there's lots of big name players in there. They'll want this. He's not giving nothing up. It'd be fascinating to see how the players cope. They're back in training today. I seen them like being on the treatment table. I don't know if that was for dance related injuries or just a bit of a warm down. And I genuinely make no joke about this, but I dread to think what their coronavirus blood test results look like. Less for coronavirus, but they're just going to be like, there's an incredible amount of alcohol in your system. for some of you, what has gone on? So I think Liverpool might look a bit lethargic, but I think the adrenaline of the game and the moment and the feeling they'll have will be enough for them. I think it could be one of those games where you actually just see attacking football. You're not going to see some kind of cagey affair. You're actually just going to see two teams just being sort of saying, we haven't quite got this in us to defend for two different reasons. We haven't quite got this in us to put our front like on the line and worry so much about it. So let's just go out there and have a game of footy, like with your mates. I'd quite like to see that, just almost, just think it'd be an incredibly entertaining game. It'd be a test of two very different kind of attacking setups. So but City, they'll be smart and they'll want to like be like, we're going to clap in on the pitch, but we're going to get you here. But then they'll miss players like Fernandinho. So who knows? Could be a fascinating game. But as John says, we're just going to get City and smile. It's going to be amazing to watch us play Man City for the first time in however many fucking seasons and think, what happens here? The best bit happened last week, and the fucking second bit happened about 45 minutes ago when the game kicked off, and you had to clap them on the pitch. That'll be it. I won't be bothered. I'll be sat there made up.
Gareth.
Yeah, I echo what the lads have said in that, obviously it's nice that there isn't something riding on it, and I can't wait to see the Guard of Honour. As weird as the Guard of Honour is in this particular circumstance, it's going to be tremendous. But I heard De Bruyne talking about this game, talking about Liverpool, being very gracious, to be honest with you. All said and done, he seems like a nice fella, I've got to be honest. And he was just basically saying, Liverpool are a great side. And like they were sort of saying, well, how come you think it's, always this big number of points now? And he was like, well, do you think it's a standard of the league thing? And he was like, no, it's the standard of the sides at the very top thing. This is the constant bar. And because when he was saying that, I was thinking, well, let's think about that then. And let's think about the message it sends if we can go and beat them still, if we can get in the reds. And, they can still win. They're obviously playing today. They're in the FA Cup today. They can still win the Champions League as well. So they don't want sort of to continually be kicked and fall away and have some, difficulty motivating themselves for those kind of games. So, there's something in it for them, obviously. But, to defeat them there and make it a ninth defeat for them this season in the league would be fantastic for us. I really want that, I've got to be honest with you. I really want to sort of rub it in, rub it in how good we are, get in their heads how good we are, throw down something for next season to say we're not going away. And if it comes to a game like it did last season where it's us v you, well, we can beat you. We all remember how much we loved it when we beat them at Anfield. That was a huge moment in this season. And okay, we've got the thing and won, but it will be a huge moment in this season and potentially next if we go there and beat them again.
All right, excellent stuff. Thank you very much to Jay, to Ben, and to Gareth for everything right the way through the show. Listen, regardless of all of it, of what's going on, firstly, enjoy Thursday night. Secondly, have enjoyed last week. I'm sure you did. And thirdly, let's spend the summer sitting in trees, socially distanced, smiling at passers-by. Sports Social Podcast Network.